and welcome to Keyframe, part of the Geek Show podcast network. And I'm Lewis, and I'm very sad today. So who else is on? We have Tucky.
Hi, I'm Tucky. Hello.
And we have Rob.
Hello, hello, hello. I'm happy, happy, happy.
Well, you shouldn't be.
The contrast.
You shouldn't be.
Why not?
So the Ruby season 12 finale is up. And anyone who's seen it knows exactly what I'm talking about, the end.
Ruby.
No, you get nothing from me. I watched they did the whole thing on Netflix where it was like a two-hour episode followed by a one-and-a-half-hour episode, and I just stopped there.
They smashed them all together into a movie-length thing.
Yeah.
Well, I watched the first season, and it wasn't anywhere near as bad as I thought it was going to be, because I've always been worried about Ruby. I'm a fan of Monty Orme stuff, his Dead Fantasy stuff especially, but I was worried about Ruby because from what I read about it and the way it was designed, I just thought, okay, trying a bit too hard. But then I watched it and it wasn't the best, but it was still the first season. And I've watched a few episodes of the second season, just kind of working my way through it when I've got time. And it's improved in the second season, I can say that. The writing, the dialogue, the animation, everything's improved.
Definitely the animation, because you see one part where that's just background characters are shadows, and then all of a sudden it's like, yeah, there's actual background characters.
Yeah, that's true. I thought that was a stylistic thing at first, but like,
wasn't that big to start with.
Yeah, I knew it was that, but I kind of like maybe it's a stylistic thing, but yeah, they stopped doing that. So
I can kind of understand why so many people are enamored with Ruby, but being an older fan and having watched loads of other Magical Girl stuff, especially with Magitech weapons, it is a Magical Girl series.
Nah, it's not.
It is. It's totally Magical Girl
it's
series.
Really not.
I don't have to say it kind of is.
No.
It's totally Magical Girl.
You don't get the Monster of the Week deal. You don't get the
You didn't get that in quite...
You don't get the...
There's several Magical Girl series that you don't get the Monster of the Week thing in.
And also, like, it's... The powers are
limited
to girls.
Being the primary example.
I really don't see the analogy. It's just a fantasy setting.
The closest to Ruby in terms of its setup and in terms of what it is Nanoha. And Nanoha definitely is a Magical Girl series.
Well, what do you mean it's setup?
And basically, with the weapons and the training and everything like that, Nanoha is the closest you'll get to it in terms of anime.
What fantasy stuff has, like, training and weapons and...
Yeah, but with Magical...
to beat something.
With Magical Girls and the odd Magical Boy...
I don't think that's a phrase you should say normally.
You can get away with Magical Girl, but when you say Magical Boy, everyone suddenly starts chuckling. What is with that?
I feel like it mostly has that in common because it's full of girls.
Yeah.
I think like that really sort of like gives it a certain vibe and everything. Just like how prominent the female characters are and how abashedly feminine
they can
be.
It's a Magical Girl series without the whole transformation shenanigans. Let's put it that way.
Well, there are some
I just fundamentally disagree. But
I can't remember.
Like, not that I have anything like a problem with Magical Girl genre. I'm just not seeing it. Like, I'm not seeing the comparison.
You need to watch more Magical Girl anime then.
Like, you know, I might have watched a lot, but I probably watch more than most people.
This is true.
And, yeah, I've just. Again, I think the only thing it really has in common is just the whole like combat and powers and stuff.
No, from my perspective, it's very much a Magical Girl series. But
also, Magical Girl series, from my experience, like they tend to, I guess, like Madoka's a bit of an exception, but they tend to have like a sort of like a singular villain. Whereas like Ruby didn't really give that off. It's just more like there's just something greater, and we're not really sure what it is.
Again, that's one of the reasons why I compare it to Nanoha specifically rather than just the general Magical Girl anime.
All right, I'll give you that. But yeah, the main thing I liked about Ruby was like it was lighthearted enough and it was funny to me and I liked the characters and yeah. I'm done. See you later.
We don't even need those sound effects. That was pretty clear enough. As he walks into the distance.
To make sure the mic picked it up. Yeah, so mental damage taken, post-traumatic stress, stuff.
I'm not sure how to process this.
Things were seen that cannot be unseen.
He sounds like a Vietnam vet.
Yeah.
I was in Nam in 72.
I made so many friends. We went through so much. And then...
All I wanted was a cheeseburger.
With no pickles. Those damn trees.
Interesting
anyway,
forests.
Yes. anyway, let's move away from the Ruby and onto...
I'll try and move on.
onto another gem of a story.
Yeah, well, surprisingly, it could be. We watched the trailer for the new animated feature film Klaus. Now, what does everyone think of that?
Really good. Nothing to do with a German talking fish from another animated show.
Yes, it's nothing to do with him.
It will be. It'll be like, Klaus, oh, the fish. Yes.
Yeah. It's Cinesite Animation's first animated production. It's co-produced with Spar Studios and various others. And the story is pretty simple. There's a guy in a village in like a snowy country, and he's trying to set up the first post office in that country, but nobody seems to be able to read or write or understand what a letter is.
Or even listen to him for more than 2 seconds.
Yes, I know. And he's been there for 176 days in that godforsaken place.
It's a long time.
And he needs a miracle.
Miracles don't always happen.
Well, he finds
real life isn't like a fairy tale.
Yeah. He finds a house where there's toys that have been half made. And he's looking at it. And then from behind him, there's a big, big guy with a white beard who goes, "Rrr." I think I know
you walked into the wrong bar.
Yes.
Oh, oh, oh.
And then he just says, "Klaus." So I'm assuming it's got something to do with Santa Claus.
Yeah, that's
miracles, snow,
toys.
Yeah,
big guy with the white beard. I'm not sure where the growling fits in, but
so is he going to become different. Santa's postman?
Possibly, we don't know.
Hey, big guy, do you like letters from kids? I can get you letters from kids.
Oh, please don't go down that route. Anyway, what did you guys think of like design, the animation, stuff like that?
I thought it was very
great shit.
Very good. I liked it a lot. It was it has like a nice sort of art style to it. It just a sort of interesting sort of take on Santa Claus, because I had the same sort of idea as you when I saw the Claus bit and just put everything together in my head. And also seems quite funny, so should be interesting.
I thought the lighting in it was really good. You know, the actual lighting effects that they've used throughout the trailer.
Yeah.
I thought the lighting really added depth. You know, when you watch these CG movies, sometimes the lighting, you know, the actual lights themselves, they seem quite flat. Mm. They don't seem to add any sort of depth to a scene, especially when the light is from behind. But those scenes where the sun was off to the side or the sun was behind and you had like the shadows moving, the clouds moving, stuff like that. And the effects that they used there were really good. I'm actually quite looking forward to this.
Well, actually, yeah, that adds to the weather.
Because
it's a, you know, snowy country, it's going to be short days and you actually see like with the shading and the shadows.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say like it's about all of that, I guess. I mean, with like a lot of animated stuff, there's either very limited shading or it's a bit like random and look designed to sort of look nice rather than, you know, designed in a way that actually implies depth and not in the sort of artsy sense, but depth in like physical depth.
Yeah,
so all the shadows and seem to make sense, so it just makes everything look more sort of solid, because again, like how we perceive depth is partly based on lighting, so they just made sure to do that correctly.
Cool. Right. Okay. Moving on to the second trailer. Now, this was originally announced in October or September last year. I can't remember which one. And this is the trailer for the anime adaptation of Masamune Yoshimoto's Kuma Miko, Girl Meets Bear. It's the manga series. And
not the furry adult entertainment.
No, it's not. The manga follows Machi, a middle school student who serves as a shrine maiden, or Miko, at a Shinto shrine enshrining a bear in the recesses of a certain mountain in Japan's northern Tohoku region. Machi's guardian is a talking bear named Natsu.
Sakamoto.
No, Natsu. And one day, Machi says to Natsu, "I want to go to a school in the city." The worrywart Natsu then gives Machi, who is ignorant in the ways of the world, a set of trials that she must pass in order to be able to survive in the city, because a bear knows what's needed to survive in the city.
Yeah, I was just thinking that.
So, I wonder what sort of trials they can be.
How to terrorize people, how to bite people's heads off.
Hopefully one of them's not.
Really,
how to use the public lavatory.
Yeah, I was going to say, hopefully one of them's not how to poo in the woods.
Hey, little girl, do you know how to poop?
Oh, don't say that.
Everybody poops, Rob. Everybody poops.
Yes. I like the design of this, and I don't know. What do you guys think?
I didn't feel like the trailer gave that much information. Like, normally when I watch these sort of, these PVs of anime, there's like a lot of dialogue and stuff, but it's all in Japanese, so I can't understand most of it. But in this one, it was like, there was very little speaking at all.
Yeah.
I guess it looks nice enough and it looks like whimsical enough, but I really, you'd have to sort of see it to know if it's going to be funny or anything.
When we were watching this, you mentioned it has a slight Nichijou feel.
Yeah, I was getting Nichijou vibes from it, partly because, as you said, like how it looks.
Yeah.
But like just because of how random it was and the talking animals and, you know, even like one of the characters kind of reminded me of one of the guys from Nichijou. I think that was a big thing.
Yeah. Because
fast comedy, all of that stuff.
Yeah, it reminded me a little bit of Barakamon as well.
Yes, and again, the sort of look and the location, and
yeah, but the music as well. It was very traditional comedy,
yeah,
type music,
proper slow bear music into like fun, yeah, little comedic chase.
Yeah,
not like Benny Hill, Yakety.
Very sort of like 90s cartoon sort of comedy music.
Yeah, but with traditional Japanese music though. Rather than Western kind of drums and stuff like that.
I don't remember that. I more remember like the composition of it rather, yeah, than what it actually sounded like. But yeah, just, yeah, it could be interesting. But I don't know. I just don't have the information to really form an opinion on it.
Yeah.
Except that bear gets a bit scary. Like, he looks so cute and then like suddenly he just gets real. And then his face gets all like realistic.
Yeah. But that's the way they generally do animals. They do them as like this kind of really cute kind of anime bear type thing. And then all of a sudden it's like serious bear.
Yeah.
More outlines and dark shading under the
we
eyes.
We need more serious bear.
Just like the fangs and like the gum.
Yeah.
Just
it's like, oh, he's cool with a little girl. No, we shouldn't be near one.
Yes.
Bear and a little girl. Anyways,
there's been weirder animal combinations.
Well, animals in anime are a bit of an odd thing as it is, because there was one that I watched ages ago, which was about the owners of these animals, and the animals were basically just animals, and the story was just about the owners. But then you have an anime series like Nyankoi, which I reviewed on this show a couple of weeks ago, and Nyankoi had the cats all talking to each other and generally just being cats, and had the whole harem stuff going on. Then you've got the animal-eared girls.
Big fan of them. Big fan of animal-eared girls.
What's your favourite set of ears?
The kind of pointy black ones.
And those cat ears.
I was going to say kitty, please. Yeah, like,
so you're not a fan of dog ears or rabbit ears?
Well, say the rabbit ear ones, I don't know. I'm not sold on them, but the cat ears, definitely cat ears.
So
it's not because the mascot of the convention that I was part of is a cat girl.
So you prefer Nekomimi, not Inumimi or
Nekomimi.
I'm all about the Neko.
Sorry, I just wanted the tongue twister.
Yes.
But like, yeah, speaking of like sort of animals and anime though, like it's kind of, I mean, I kind of noticed this before, but like it made me sort of, what you said sort of made me realize, I guess, that like it's anime is very sort of human centric. They like to use a lot of human characters, and then when animals are involved,
yeah,
it's like humanoid. So you got the animal ear thing, and then you was talking about like Nyankoi, and you were saying that the cats,
yeah,
you know, were interesting to some extent, but then they kind of got overshadowed by the characters,
yeah,
which are humans, and like they don't really do animals very much in anime.
Well, I mean, even when you look
like
at
actual animals,
even when you look at something more recent like The Boy and the Beast, they're all anthropomorphic beasts. You know, it's not some kid living in the forest with a bear.
Jungle Book.
Yeah. Mowgli. Thing is,
yeah, you don't get stuff like that a lot. You get it more, a lot more in Western stuff.
The irony is, this is more the girl lives in the forest with a bear. And the bear, I'm assuming, is just, well, he's anthropomorphized to a degree, but it's not like he has suddenly has human hands and stuff like that.
It's more as it's more his personality and nature that's been personified.
Yeah.
Rather than his appearance. He still just looks like a bear.
Yeah. If you saw him, you'd run.
Yeah. And then when he spoke, you'd be like, what?
So you put a bear like that in The Reverend, I think it would make a better movie.
What, just them two having
Leo,
a conversation?
Leo, I'm a big fan. Give me a hug. Get away.
Maybe not that kind of voice. It would be odd if the bear
you
had that
say
kind of thing.
What are you doing over there? Mining? Let me in on the mining.
You sound like Mickey Mouse.
Oh, yeah,
don't so. I'm terrible at voices. I can do American narrator, and that's about it.
Which one's American narrator?
I don't know. yeah, there you go. And you're posing a corner. Can I do it? Can I do it under pressure?
I'm confused now. Lewis,
the American narrator. Welcome to
Ohio.
Don't
look at me. I still got severe mental damage. Too many hit points were lost yesterday.
Not to self. Do not let Lewis watch Ruby before a show.
Well, I didn't.
After the show, then he can have a week to recover.
I was going to say, I didn't know they were going to do this. I knew they were going to do this, but I thought they'd be nice about it at least.
No. They care not for their viewers.
No, not going to happen. Anyway, next up then. Tucky, do you want to take this one away?
Mecha Robot Grommet, and that's not the thing you stick in your ears when you're on an airplane, in Bristol. As Aardman
Grommet, as in the Aardman Grommet.
Yeah, Aardman Grommet. Not like a giant plasticine robot, although that would be pretty cool if it gets shiny plasticine.
Okay.
It's a mech robot, 4 meter tall, named GRMT-02. It's been shipped across the world from Hong Kong, where it started in an exhibition in 2014. So it's got a few stamps on the old passport.
Okay.
However, the mech designer was British Aardman artist Gavin Strange. Great name. he's a fan of Japanese mech robots and was inspired. It's what inspired him to get into animation. And Strange said that he imagines the real dog-sized grommet piloting the Colossus.
See, that'd be interesting if Aardman suddenly did a Wallace and Gromit mech version.
Yeah, I want to see a mech anime of that.
Giant penguin kaiju.
Yeah, versus the giant grommet.
I'd watch
And
that.
You have giant mecha Wallace just sitting to one side eating a giant piece of cheese.
So yeah, it'd be refreshing for Christmas time TV.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm not that familiar with the series, but from what I've sort of seen of it, it doesn't seem that far outside of the realm of possibility.
Right, in the wrong trousers, it was just mech trousers. Grommet.
Yeah, but can you imagine if they took it one step further and tried to do the whole Gurren Lagann thing? Then you have the giant mecha penguin versus the giant mecha grommet, but they're throwing giant pieces of cheese.
Yours is the Wednesday day that will pierce the heavens.
Cheese.
It's not a spiral galaxy that they're throwing, it's a wheel of cheese.
I just think there's actually quite a few robots in it. I'm just thinking about the one on the moon.
Oh yes, there is. The one with the skis.
Yeah. Ollie Wonder. Oh, I nearly cried at the end of that.
Yeah.
Ollie Wonder was to go skiing. Poor dishwasher thing.
Yeah, I'm still not sure what it was.
And how it was managed to get like coin operation on the moon, and it was British currency it took.
There's something that
let's just slate it. Let me tell you about continuity problems in Wallace and Gromit.
Do we care?
No, not really.
True.
Although it's just a big advert for Wensleydale cheese and Ritz crackers.
Yeah, it was. Crackers and cheese.
Cheese, Gromits.
So, yeah, anyway, back to the Mecha Grommet.
63 stones of it.
Seriously?
Yeah.
You don't want that to fall on your foot.
You say that in one of them gastric band wards.
Have you heard? Harrison Ford is suing the company that made the Millennium Falcon because it broke his foot.
Yes.
He waited until after the release of the movie to sue the company.
It's great though. He's biding his time. He's like, oh.
He's just waiting. He's like,
okay, Mr. Ford. No, I'm fine. I'm perfectly fine. Plotting, rubbing hands.
Waited until he was killed off in the movie and didn't have to go back to Star Wars.
It's like, well, this is a bit awkward, but you're getting sued. You broke my foot.
Well, damn, you said you were home. I don't care about that. That was a movie. I was playing a role. So, yeah. I watched the trailer for How It Should Have Ended for 2016, and they had like Batman and Superman, and Batman's going, "We're home, Chewie." And Superman looks at him and goes, "When did I become the sidekick?" Batman's going, "You'll always be the sidekick because I'm Batman."
I'm Batman. Yes.
So, yes. Anyway, moving on from sidekicks and Batmans to Saint Seiya.
Saint Seiya.
Now, Tucky saw the shiny armor.
I recovered my eyesight.
Remember we were talking about that Sensei exhibition a while ago when they had the shiniest of shiny armor? Mm-hmm. Tucky's seen that and he wants the shiny armor now.
I would kill. I would honestly kill for it.
Please don't kill. Killing's bad. Killing's very bad. Killing makes people sad.
This does not go down as a confession.
So anyway, why is Saint Seiya back in the news again?
Largest Guinness Book of World Records, largest collection of Saint Seiya merchandise awarded to Jorge.
I just call him George.
Yeah, George. George Luis Vasquez Flores.
George Luis Vasquez Flores.
From Peru. And he was given a certificate because he has 6,688 items.
What
ranging
a weeb.
ranging from action figures, magnets, wallets, teacups, tea cozies, towels, posters, manga, games, a lock of the author's hair.
He's even got cassettes of the audiobooks.
Did you make up that last bit?
I have no idea. I bet he's just cut limbs off the manga, just keeping it. And he's the finger. Signed photos, vinyl discs of the music. 20 years he's been collecting this stuff. 20 years.
There's a couple of things that I want to say about this. Number one, all those people who think that they're serious collectors, yeah.
Yeah, all you get people good. Who collect N64 things and think you're a collector, you're not.
Yeah.
Get good, scrub. Yes. Get on my level.
I mean, he could literally go anywhere in the world to any anime fan and say, nah.
He becomes an exhibit in himself. It says here, like, he does exhibits at anime festivals around Mexico and all of Southern America. And the thing is, it's the kind of thing that's drawn in crowds now at conventions. Well,
Sensei is massive in Latin America and South America.
Rightfully so.
Not really big in North America because, well, it's the Americans, you know, and
There's not enough fan service for it to be interesting.
Well,
in America.
There's several reasons. Number one, not enough fan service. Number two, it contains lots of Greek and Roman mythology references. And if it didn't happen in the last 250 years of American history, it doesn't count. Yep. Basically, yeah. It is exactly that. It's weird how when people become quite xenophobic, they try to deny the existence of anywhere else in the world before their country was made or their religion was made.
America, we've been here for 200 years, and before then, the world was just mud sticks.
Nobody existed in any other country before we were here, and we sprouted from the earth.
Oh, that there was one video online where there's like a group of them protesting, saying, "Oh, immigrants out, we want immigrants to go home." And just this Native American walks past with a pusher, "Yeah, go on home, you immigrants." And then just stunned silence falls around them. And it's like, yes, well and truly trolled.
Oh, that's genius.
That's the thing, they had absolutely no comeback for it.
GG. GG Nuri.
Yes, I mean, seriously.
So, sticking along Saint Seiya line.
Yeah,
that's how it goes into international immigration policy from a collection of anime goods.
That pulled me out of my depression for a little while.
No, seriously, his collection, though, is just, it's, there's a video that's attached to this article, and all you could see in the video, every so often, it'd cut to somebody staring at the shininess of the armor on these figures. There's some kid just staring at it with his mouth open going,
"It's got to be some health and safety on the side where shades, like, you've got to wear these, trust us."
Can you imagine the thought in the kid's head going, "Shiny, never seen anything so shiny."
It is. You can see the expression of, "Oh!"
Exactly.
As if a new sense has just arrived. Eyes.
Because
their senses.
No, don't. Did you say that on purpose?
Yes.
You did. I've gotten you're familiar with Sensei. Because the sense is basically one of those things that have to awaken the sixth sense.
And there he was awakened. Just stare at the action figure. That's your trigger. But I mean, the sheer amount of collection, I know it's over 20 years, but I wonder if he'd ever, like, get it valued.
I want to know if he's married and what does his wife think of this?
Should be awesome if he is.
Yeah, I know.
In fact, I'm going to have to Google it.
I don't know.
Now.
I think you know, putting like social preconceptions and expectations aside, I think you got to be a bit lame to be married to someone who has this and then criticize it. Like, just because of its sheer scale, you got to be like, okay,
we're assuming we're assuming that she's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Because if you're married and your wife allows you to collect this much stuff for 20 years, she's going to be pretty cool.
Well, that's what I'm saying. You would be pretty lame to not allow it. That's what I think.
Exactly. It kind of dwarfs any collection that you could think of. I mean, you hear about people who say, oh, I've got 100 figures. Oh, I've got all this collection of Bleach manga. Oh, I've got the entire run of this.
And then I've got all these PlayStation 2 games.
Yes. I have all of this. I have all of this. I have almost 7,000 pieces of Saint Seiya merchandise.
Yeah.
Who wants to play?
It's an exposition being made by one guy. There you have it. I don't think most people can do that with something like with cars, maybe, because cars are large, but.
And heavy.
Yeah. I think he's got a family. It's either that or he's a pimp.
Probably he's got a family.
That's how he makes his money.
He probably has a family.
Figurines.
Thing is, can you imagine? He's a lawyer, so all he spends his money on then. Do you know the reason I think why his wife is okay with it? Because he's not going out drinking and clubbing and stuff like that. He's basically spending his money on his family and this. She knows exactly where the money's going.
Honey, why is there a $200 bill? Oh, that's why. I know exactly where the money's going.
I don't think she has a problem with it at all, because she knows where the money's going. She knows what his passion is, what his hobby is. You know, if he was going out and going clubbing or going out drinking with his mates, there's always going to be that worry.
And South America's very promiscuous.
I don't know how, like, marriages work. So, like, you know, I don't know how people can get with, like, money and stuff like that. And I guess it depends on the arrangement that people have, but if we turn to
our resident expert,
it causes arguments, lots of them. Fair play to the guy, but the sheer amount that he has to, I mean, it's not just the fact that he's actually collected them, but you've got to think of the, he's got to maintain them.
Yeah.
So the amount of polish to keep that shiny armor super shiny.
Well, he keeps it in a glass case for that reason.
And that's the thing, the glass cases as well. The cost for display cases is stupid.
I feel like he must have lost, like, some stuff must have gotten damaged in transit as well.
The thing, if he's moving it from place to place, he'll have insurance on it as well.
And can you imagine how much insurance he's got on all of that?
Mm.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot.
I'm tempted to ask him to come to SunnyCon and do it. Just give him a floor of St. James and say, there you go, just put everything
in. Wait until you've done your cosplay.
All of that we've just sort of considered about, like, just how much of a pain it is to have all of that. I think it's a bit different when you've got 700 items of something that you really like.
Yeah.
But I guess that's why they say that, like, material items don't make you happy. Because it's a pain to maintain all of that and make sure you don't lose anything.
This is true. But can you imagine, just him by himself, if he started going to a few cons in North America, he could probably raise the popularity of Saint Seiya across the country by himself.
Oh, become a spokesman, no doubt. Yeah. Easy.
And
one
in Europe as well.
Went on a journey to increase the popularity of one legendary show, traveled across the country, bringing all of his
bringing
stuff.
The shininess to the masses.
That was better than what I was going to say, so I'm glad you said it. But yeah.
Oh.
Seriously.
One man, one series, one goal.
Lots of shine. Do you know, now I understand, it's all clear now, everything is clear, why in, what was it, the Joss Whedon series, Firefly, instead of saying everything's good, they say everything's shiny. I understand now Joss Whedon is a fan of Saint Seiya. That's my proof right there.
I think Turtle Wax are missing out a trick not sponsoring them.
Oh god, yeah, Turtle Wax, what are you doing? Seriously, you want to advertise shiny cars, get Saint Seiya to advertise your wax. Just say, I keep my armor polished, look how shiny my armor is. Your car could also look like my armor.
Hey, there, you get some turtle wax, you put some glitter in, call it Cosmo Wax, sort it.
You know how, like, some sort of, like, I think, like, games and I guess some anime companies, occasionally they do competitions and the prize is, like, some item which has its theme. Like, I think Capcom a while ago did a Street Fighter tournament and there was a Street Fighter car.
Yeah.
Like, Sensei would do that, but the car is just, like, gold chrome.
Yes, it would be the most ostentatious car you've ever seen. You know how heads turn when someone's driving down the street with like a Lamborghini or a Ferrari or something like that?
Yeah.
Can you imagine that nobody would look at a Ferrari or Lamborghini if you went down the street with your gold chrome car?
Yeah.
The shininess. Especially if it's got that, what is it, if it's a lowrider.
Oh, like with a hydraulic suspension and bouncing. Suspension.
Have that weird strobing effect cause fits in people as you're going down. Anyway, yeah, Tucky. Just to bring this back on track for a second before we go into the last news story, you wanted to do a cosplay of this.
I am. Well, originally it was Libra because I am a Libra. But after you suggested Taurus, I'm really tempted to do Taurus because
you've got the build for it for a start.
Well, this is the thing though.
Taurus has horns as well.
Yeah, my one rule of cosplay is there's only two types of cosplay that will win cosplay contests. And if you're listening, you'll start noticing this. That you have tits or armor, T and A,
boobs and armor.
That's all that ever wins cosplay contests. And I mean, not all of them, because some of them actually have integrity, but but it's a given. That's why League of Legends cosplayers are doing so well. It's not because like the craft's not there. It's because attractive girls in armor win. And since I don't have like the boobs for it, I might as well make the armor. And if it's shiny armor, hopefully eclipse the boobs. I've just upset half the cosplay community there by making that assumption.
I'm worried about what those noises were.
The thing is with the armor,
passive aggressive sighing. I don't know what you were thinking.
I was worried about whether it was the effect of the shininess.
No. Oh. That's gonna be the difficult part, because it's gonna be like thermoplastic armor.
Yeah.
And it's getting it to actually be like chrome, so it's gonna have to be either gold leaf, which will be super expensive.
Yes.
Or,
you don't want to go down the gold leaf.
It's
route.
Just prime it and then have some chrome paint and then get it specially sprayed gold chrome. Mm. Which, yeah, again, more cost, but for the sake of being the most photographed cosplayer of the year, I think it'd be worth it.
Yes.
I might as well start myself a cosplay fan page and just let my ego go into overdrive.
I am Bull.
To just call up every convention and like, hey, I'm the guy with the shiny armor. Do you want this as a guest?
You just go on stage and go, strong like Bull.
Bull characters make me sad now.
Oh.
We may also have an episode title. I don't know. Right, moving on to the final news story. I think you should take this one, Lewis.
Okay. It's been a thing for a while, like in Japan, when promoting campaigns and products and things like that, to use anime motifs and stuff like that. I mean, we even, like a couple of episodes ago, we had the Toyota Prius one, didn't we?
Yeah.
And it had all of that anime stuff. Well, there's been like presidential campaigns using anime style characters, and for some reason, Kirino is drumming up voters for a Japan election.
Kirino? Which one's Kirino?
Kirino Kosaka from Orinomoto Konni Kawaii Wake Ganai.
Oh, God.
The incest anime. For like those
I like the
tongue twister, the incest anime.
Oh, don't say it like that. That's a totally different series. Anyway, Lewis, let's keep this healthy.
Well, let's just read the article then. It says, like, where's the relevant bit? The Kirino, the star of the light novel manga series, Oraimo, shortened, has been recruited by the ministry to spread the world in 18 Sai Senkyo campaign, and since she has just turned 18. I don't know if that's a canon plot thing, but yeah. So they launched a campaign called 18 Sai Senkyo, the 18-year-old election, to drum up voter turnout among 18 to 19-year-olds. So it's to get, I guess, younger people to vote.
Please, sir, I have a question.
I might not be able to answer it, but you're free to ask.
Of all the anime characters, especially the female ones,
yeah,
why Kirino?
Well, you know, like, some people, like, they really like someone, but, like, sometimes that person may not be socially appropriate to like. So I guess they figured that by having a character that has those kind of issues, it'd be relatable to that crowd and encourage them to vote. I mean, after all, Kirino is in love with her older brother, and there you go.
But it's socially appropriate to vote.
I just made that up entirely. Well, not the bit about the character loving an older brother, but
no,
I said that because I have no idea why Kieran her.
I mean,
not thing whatsoever.
Is, it's thing is, even though you made it up, it's plausible, isn't it? You can just imagine somebody in the ministry going, so we need to attract young people, and they think it's not right to vote. They think they should rebel against voting. So which character can we use to bring in the voters? I know, let's choose a controversial character from a controversial series.
I just imagine Kirino just saying, like, I declare tax-exempt status from all couples that are made for brothers and little sisters.
Does she stamp her foot afterwards and storm away? I'm sorry, but...
Yeah.
Right. I'm just going to liken this to something. Right. Years ago, I reviewed an anime series called Binchotan.
Mm.
Binchotan is kind of... On the cuteness factor, it comes out at around 11,500.
Mm.
You know, this is using the standard anime 9,000 scale. On the cuteness factor, it's about 11,500. It's about a little girl who lives by herself in the forest, and her name is Binchotan. And she goes into the city every day on the back of a very large duck, and she does odd jobs in the city.
Did you say a duck or a dog?
Duck. She does odd jobs in the city, and every so often she makes the odd friend here and there. But it's mainly she does cleaning jobs, uses the money to buy rice, takes it home, cooks dinner, goes to sleep. But she lives in the forest with her friends in the forest. She's very poor, and she was told by her grandma that tying a piece of charcoal to her head would bring her luck. And it's a very cute series.
Mm.
Very, very cute. Very charming. And I adored it. You know, I scored it an 8.
There's a but in this somewhere.
Yeah.
The thing is, because she uses a piece of charcoal, you know, she ties it like a charcoal piece to her head, she became kind of the mascot character for the entire charcoal region of Japan.
Ah.
Right. And it made sense.
Yeah.
That made sense. The connection was there. Binchotan being the mascot character made total sense. This doesn't.
Yeah, I can't. Again, the connection here is
there
basically...
might be something we don't know.
According to this article, the connection is the age, but I'm sure there are other 18-year-old characters. I mean, I guess...
There's plenty of 18-year-old characters in anime.
Maybe it's just because she was the most popular 18-year-old female around the time. Like, it's...
What, now?
I mean, in anime. Like, it's a fairly popular series, like, you know... Like, yeah, she's a character in the fighting game, all of that stuff. It's the only thing I can really think of.
Why not go for someone like Super Sonico? Isn't she 18 as well?
I have no idea. Forever I mean, 18. It says that Kirino Kosaka has just turned 18. I'm not sure if that... I'm not sure what
that
means.
That's probably the important part.
Yeah.
The just turned 18 bit.
I mean, Orinomoto has existed for 18 years. I know that much. But, yeah. But as far as I'm aware, the series is done as well. So it's not like she's turned the age as part of the plot advancement. It's probably just sort of like what a birthday is and when the first series took place in terms of years. Now she'd be 18. But yeah, I don't know what to say.
That's just, it's just all kinds of weird.
Yeah.
Imagine if British politics did it.
So,
you haven't voted yet.
So, what is your stance on the increasing rate of marriage between brothers and younger sisters? Chalk, you might ask it off, but I kind of like it. This is all I can picture. This is all I can picture.
I'm trying to think of what there was.
An anime and erige for everyone.
That's how the Tories are going to win the next election, isn't it?
Most likely.
They'll use any dirty tactics.
Can you imagine?
Oh, if you like bacon.
Salted pork.
No, thank you.
There you go. Anyway, whoever's running Whitney for the next election, give out free bacon. You're down to win.
I have a great relationship with the pigs. I've always had a great relationship with the pigs.
Are we talking about the police or the animal?
Why not both?
The animal and Donald Trump.
Oh, this is getting very wrong. I think we need to take a break before we step off the road and into another world entirely.
Yeah, and something completely different for when we come back.
Yes, right. Back in a moment after these messages.
Hello, this is Ryan from the Geek Show Podcast Network. Do you like trees? What about paper? What about words? Yes, words are good. Then you will like Literally Loitering, unavailable on the Geek Show Podcast Network.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Keyframe, the Geek Show's dedicated animation podcast. And now we're getting into some anime, and you thought you got away. Well, you thought wrong. Take it away, Lewis.
Just to say, when it falls, there'll be no hero in the end who'll rise above, because the incest anime is back. Yes.
And the crowd.
You thought you got away, but you didn't.
Well,
today, I've been watching Ore no Emoto Konni Kawaii Wakeganai.
Yes. Technically, it's not the incest anime, though.
Yes, but it's funny to call it that.
The thing is, there was one from years ago. There's been a couple of them that deal with the whole brother-sister relationship thing.
Mm.
I think it was Boku wa Imoto no Koishiteru or something like that.
I thought he was going to say something else for a second.
The difference between that...
Sorry.
Yeah, I know. The difference between that one and this one is actually quite striking, because that one was like a serious drama and it actually looked at the repercussions of stuff like that as well. It looked at a lot of things in terms of the mentality of the characters and stuff like that. But this one's very different, I'm assuming.
Yeah, from what you described, it's very different. I mean, for the most part, it's been pretty lighthearted throughout. Like, there's a few dramery bits here and there, but they're more sort of weighted in sort of emotions rather than sort of the repercussions of things. Well, basically, Ore no Emoto Konni Kawaii Wakeganai is an anime about the relationship between a brother and sister. The main character is called Kyosuke Kosaka, and his younger sister has not spoken to him for years. His younger sister is Kirino Kosaka, the girl we were just talking about, except it takes place like probably about 3 years in the past compared to her being 18 now. And yeah, she hasn't talked to him. And she's like the sort of like the golden child of the family. She's like, she's attractive. She's like intelligent. She's good at sports. She's like a model outside of like all of her work. She does all club activities and all of that stuff.
So why hasn't she spoken to him?
That is something that is not like, to be completely straightforward about it, that's something that is talked about in season 2, not in this one.
All right. Okay.
But yeah, she hasn't talked to him for a while. Like, whenever he goes in, he's like, Tadaima, she just continues doing whatever she's doing, which is pretty rude. And, like, one day he bumps into her, and then she just ignores him, usual Kirino style. And he finds this weird DVD on the floor, and it's like a magical girl anime. And he's just like, what is this? Like, well, he finds it later, where he bumped into her, and then he opens it up, and he sees a little sister Erige inside, and he's like, what is this? And he's just like, who could it be? Could it be Dad? No way. Could it be Mom? Not a chance. Then who else can it? And Kirino's wigging out because it's like, where is it? Did someone find this? Because it's like her secret. And then he's like, I've got it. And then from there they get talking and she explains like, I'm basically a massive weeb and I cannot tell anyone ever. And like, yeah, from there, like, you know, they start talking more and he basically helps her to sort of, I guess, improve that area of her life, like finding friends to express that side of her with and, you know, just sort of trying to work out, you know, this sort of dissonance between who she really is on that side and the face that she presents to everyone else as a sort of perfect sort of teenage girl. And that's basically what, like, this season's been about, like, the trials and tribulations they go through. And the funny thing is, like, whilst everyone says, oh, it's an incest anime and everything, and it's more in undertones than anything else.
Yeah.
Like it's the undertones are very evident, but it's never like really on the nose about it. Like, for example, Kirino is obviously grateful to the help that she's gotten from Kyosuke, but she's very bad at expressing it. So she develops the sort of typical tsundere character sort of traits, like by sort of insulting him and criticizing him, stuff like that. She doesn't seem to be capable of expressing the gratitude that she has towards him for, you know, helping her be herself and find friends who like the same sort of thing as she does.
Yeah.
But again, none of this is really said. You can just sort of see it, like, in how the characters interact with each other. And
all right. So it does well with inferring information.
Yeah, definitely, I would say. I think, like, another sort of, like, plot line, if you will, is like, again, the two separate things is like her relationship with Kyosuke and Kirino's relationship with anime. You know, as the plot goes by, certain people find out Kyosuke has to bail her out, like by helping to hide a secret, or like some people find out and they have to accept it.
Are we talking like parents and friends or?
Yeah, parents and friends mostly. People who just generally disapprove of it. And, you know, with the help of Kyosuke, like a lot of people sort of accepted the fact that she likes anime and, you know, and just sort of let her do her thing, especially given the fact that, you know, outside of it, she's a valuable asset to society, as people would put it.
Yeah.
But because of, like, you know, some of the, like, the murder cases about otakus and, you know, stuff like that, some, and the fact that she likes little sister stuff, this is, like, the big problem that a lot of people have, and this is where Kyosuke says, I love little sister stuff, and he has to take the bullet, even though he seems very creeped out by it. And, but, like, yeah, like, it's sort of about, you know, being yourself in a way. Like, and, you know, if you like what you like, you know, who cares if you're a normal, productive, I guess, person outside of it. And I found that actually quite interesting, because I'm sure look on Mao, a lot of people clearly struggle with this identity issue.
Yeah.
Full of people who love anime, have anime profile pictures, have Japanese in, like, their titles, have Japanese in their sigs, and they're just like, oh, well, like, you know, it's, I'm not a weeb, I go gym, I do this, I do that. And it's just like, well, it's, yeah, that's fine. Mal. Just be yourself. You don't have to posture about how normal you are.
It's not just Mal, Anime Planet, AniDB, yeah. Gobayano. You know, in fact, every convention that we've ever been to.
Full of weebs pretending not to be weebs. Calling other people weebs.
Some kind of superiority and elitism to give people an excuse to look down on exactly what they're like.
Every convention I go to, I go cosplaying as a trucker.
But, yeah, I mean, regarding the show, though, it's like, when you sort of said, you know, watch it, I was kind of like, I've seen it before and I don't really want to see it again, because it was a while ago I saw it. I didn't remember it that well, and I just remember it being a bit more cringy because of the premise, but it's actually like a more sort of subtle and smarter than that, and it feels like it's more about, to be honest, Kirino's relationship with manga, or at least about as much, rather than, you know, just being about the fact that it's brother and sister thing.
The weird thing is, when it came out, a lot of people didn't like it, thought it was exactly what most people would think it is. It's basically, oh yeah, it's about the brother-sister relationship, that sort of thing. And even I started watching it, you know, just thinking, this is it, this is this, I'll watch a few episodes. And I found myself thinking, it's a bit of an odd series, it's a bit of an odd duck. It kind of, I mean, I didn't like what came out of it. In terms
of
season
one, or
no, what came out of the entire franchise,
right?
Because that gave rise to all the other little sister, childhood best friend type anime series,
Kiss Exes.
Well, even that,
that
and various
it,
others.
Or, I don't know. Because I remember hearing Kiss Exes time ago, but this is like relatively new series. Relatively,
well,
I don't know.
Yeah, Kiss Exes is kind of extreme version of whatever, but we don't mention that because that. We jokingly call this the incest anime, but that really is.
Yeah, full on.
Yeah. I think with Oreimo, the main thing was it gave rise to all the other title is My Little Sister Can't Be This Cute, right? But then you had, you know, My Little Sister Is This and My Little Sister Is That.
Yeah.
You know, you had all those other anime that were trying to capitalize on the success of this one, as you always get.
Yeah, I think I know the sort of things you're talking about. I haven't seen them too much, but it's definitely the kind of show that will pop up and you'll get things, not necessarily like it, but trying to sort of, you know, as you said, capitalize on its success.
I think that's what soured me a little on the franchise was just all of the spin-offs that came afterwards.
It has spin-offs?
Well, not spin-offs, sorry. All the copycat type anime, sorry. Not spin-offs, bad choice of words there.
Yeah, I can understand that, because it's always when you're sort of approaching like an artwork, because anime is art.
Yeah.
When you're approaching an artwork from the perspective of like, I'm going to make as much money as possible and be completely unoriginal by pinching ideas off of this thing, it's never going to be anything that good. It's pretty much how it is.
Yeah.
One other thing to mention about the series as well is that it has some harem elements to it. Like, it's not that full on about it, but again, like, the only major sort of male character is the main character. And, like, over time, other female characters become interested in him, but it's not, like, in your face, at least not at the beginning. Like, for the most part, it's, like, it's, you know, it's not really there, but it just slowly develops. But it has an element of that in it as well. It's a slice of life, I guess, really, but with, like, a very sort of focused string of, like, events and plot.
Yeah.
But, you
he's
know,
also not really a typical harem lead as well.
I guess not. He has he definitely has a personality at least, and he has his own feelings and sort of opinions, and he's willing to express them. And I really like that in sort of male main characters. And in a lot of harem anime, things seem to happen to the main characters. They don't have a lot of agency, but this character, he has a lot and tries to apply what he can do in situations where he doesn't necessarily have a lot of influence. Like, there was one part where Kirino, being the weave that she is, starts writing light novels, and she actually gets one published by Raigeki Bunko, and it sells really well, and then they start to make it into an anime, but Executive Meddling wants to change everything to the point they want to change the gender of the main character. And obviously he's out of his element in a board meeting, but he just gets on his knees and begs, and it works. He's very willing to go very far for other people, especially his little sister. And, you know, when the harem elements come into play, I can say, okay, these people like him because he's willing to put himself that far for other people, which is respectable. It's not just kind of oh, these girls like him because I don't know. It's not like that.
Yeah.
Like Sword Art Online, for example.
Well, he's kind of similar to, remember you did that Love Election in Chocolate anime? He's kind of similar to the lead male from that.
Yeah, they have quite a bit in common, actually, yeah. They're kind of similar in that regard.
So, overall then, what do you think?
It's not really as bad as you'd think from just, looking at the name and just assuming from the nature of it. I think, the characters are interesting enough. It's mostly focused around Kyosuke and Kirino and her friends. Some people are likely to find Kirino insufferable because she can be very sort of mean, but if you kind of, think about her intentions, especially if you see how it ends, it kind of makes sense and it seems fair. She's not like the cruelest tsundere out there, so it's all right. But overall, I got more enjoyment out of it the second time watching it than I thought I would, to be completely honest. I was very much like, oh, it's the incest anime again. No, but it's not really like that. It's just a story about a girl who likes anime and is having trouble facing out to the public about it and being herself, and her brother helps her.
So I think with this series then, so I think with this series then, closer examination is the watchword, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I feel that way about a lot of anime, especially some of the ones I've been reviewing lately. Yeah. Just shows in general, you got to sort of approach it from the perspective of the show and try and see what you can get from it based on what it's willing to offer you.
Yeah.
Not really be like, this is what I want from it. I don't want incest, so I'm not going to, just look at it from that perspective. And, I think I think it's surprisingly relatable, because whilst most anime fans probably don't have romantic issues with their siblings and probably can't relate to it on that level, they probably can relate to the idea of being an anime fan in a society that's not necessarily as big on it.
Yeah.
That's relatable, and I think that's interesting.
Cool. Right, moving on to the Tuckster, Mr. Tucky.
Right, so
what enjoyable anime have you been watching that's not for kids this week?
Battle Girls Time Paradox from MVM Entertainment. It all starts off with a quote, which is one of the first lines in it. It's thinking back, this is where everything began to go wrong. Probably. And that's pretty much sums up everything about it.
So thinking back when I gave this to you last week.
this is the thing. I'm all for, the weird ones. And without sound pervy, I do like the smut.
Everyone likes the smut. And we're some people more open about it than others.
with title Battle Girls Time Paradox, you know you're going to get something like that in. So anyway, lead character is called Hideyoshi. That's her nickname from school. And she's your typical early teen student who's struck with bad luck. And she's magically transported to old Japan via a mystic ritual by a mysterious figure in a temple. Which she was only visiting to wish to get one of them luck charms just to do better in her studies. So anyway, she's transported back to the time of the old Japanese legends, specifically Oda Nobunaga, who is one of the most referenced in anime, I believe, because there's so many Oda Nobunaga animes out there.
Not just in anime, in Japanese video games, in Japanese cinema, in manga.
Yeah, everywhere.
You'd think, with all of the references, why isn't there an actual religion?
Well, You never know. Don't give them ideas.
There will be somewhere. There's some secret society in Japan, I'm sure of it. They're like, you know, we have the Freemasons in the Western world. They have like the
cult of Oda.
The cult of Oda, yes.
Illuminati.
Like yeah, like the Illuminati. They have the cult of Oda in Japan, and they're secretly controlling all of Japan.
So, well, the twist in this series, Oda isn't like an old man of war. It's a very hot, big-breasted woman who wears gravity-defying armor. And I use the term as loose as
as the armor fit. Itself.
Yep. No,
the armor's held on by magic tape.
Yeah. It's held on by the collective will of the prudish. So it's so Hideyoshi is she's like got a cute naivety to her. And at the beginning, she doesn't think that she's actually travelled through time. She just thinks that she's hanging out with some really dedicated cosplayers.
See, I like that.
And Oda like trusts her from the beginning and tells her General Gucci to trust her heart. And when I say like trust her heart, she like pokes her boob. So trust this rather than this. It's more of a visual thing, but like hidden boob. So
go for if you've got it, flaunt it.
So if this world that's just transported to, the kicker to it is that there is no men in it. It is 100% women.
I just want to go back to the head or boob thing. These anime, a lot of anime are directed at teenage boys. So what kind of message are
they trust sending? Your breasts.
No. Do not believe in the head. Believe in the boobs.
Well, not a good one.
Exactly.
Sex really sells. So anyway, like the world is 100% women. It's referenced early on, like a funny exchange with the only like male voice actor in it was Greg Ayres, who does the voice of the dog Shiro, who, you know, incidentally is also a pervert. So pervert talking dog in there. And then
you ain't nothing but a hound dog.
Trying to explain like, oh, where do babies come from? She whispers in his ear and he just gives like a deaf stare and dare you to say that again. He's like, no, they come from cabbage patches and the stalk. Or sometimes they're found inside bamboo. And then there's Hideyoshi sitting there with literally arrow in her eyes, waiting for the real dirty scoop. But the plot follows this girl out of her time who becomes a warrior for Order. And I say warrior, her only skills are she watched a TV show called Kung Fat, which is about a fat guy who knows Kung Fu.
Samo. It's a Samo reference.
This is a very
it?
Interesting anime.
It's a Samo reference, isn't it?
Yeah.
She was watching the Japanese version of the anime version of Martial Law.
That's basically it. And then that's where she gets her skill from. And there's an early contest to see her training. She's useless with a sword. She's useless with a bow. She's useless with everything but the staff. And even then, she's useless with that. If I was a warrior, I would not take her on. But for some reason, this Oda Nobunaga character takes her on and makes her one of our wards or retainers. And she says, look, I'm on a quest. I want to conquer. And it's used a lot, conquer. It's even written on a sword, a huge 6-foot sword, which should be unwieldable, but it's not.
She's not like the female version of Guts, is she?
Basically. There's big similarities in it, but the Oda character, she's traveling all around Japan. I say traveling all around Japan. It's a very small Japan, to find all bits of the Crimson Armor. And the Crimson Armor was said to be given, was worn by a man once, and the gods spited him for some reason. He did something wrong, and the Crimson Armor was spread across the whole of Japan, and it said whoever brings it back together can have the power and the will to conquer and unite the land of the rising sun.
I was just waiting for you to say whoever brings it together can summon Shenlong and make any wish they deserve.
I would end everything pretty quickly.
So Hideyoshi just looks at her and goes, yeah, so you're trying to get a collection. I sometimes do that. And she's meaning more of the like capsule figures collection. The animation is standard quality in places. There are some stunning details in background, especially in areas like Oda Nobunaga's palace.
Did you say Oda Nobunaga?
Nobunaga.
What?
it's like the Makaminas. My pronunciation goes sometimes. And it's,
you mean like now?
Yeah. But yeah, like I say, in the palace, Oda's palace, it's great artwork. But
sounds like a Japanese restaurant, Oda's palace.
Reminds me of a level in Tales of Xillia. It's like Oda Palace. It's like a place to get food.
Yeah. But in other areas of the animation, though, it feels really phoned in. And what one gripe I have is the dubbing. The mouth movements are well out.
Yeah. On the Japanese version.
Is it like the 70s? Martial arts.
Yeah,
movies.
Yeah, like the kung fu.
Where they go? Fight me.
the mouse moving and there's no sound, and then all of a sudden there's like a whole sentence squeezed in 2 seconds. And
wow.
In like the Chinese or the Japanese dub, it's this massive exposition about how this person killed his father or his teacher, and how he's there to get revenge, and he's traveled the land and become stronger. But in the English dub, it just says, fight me.
Yes.
it's
exactly like that. And other noted point on the animation is there's way too much focus on breast jiggle. Now, I know I said I like the pervy stuff, but there is way too much breast jiggle focus.
Is it like really stupid looking? Like,
oh, my word.
Are we talking like, you mentioned this to me before, and you said it's focused on it a lot, but it's in a very dull way.
It's repetitive. It's like the cut and paste the exact same boob jiggle over and over. And the butt shots as well. The butt shots, it's frustrating because they could have done something good with this. But the fan service won out at the end of the day. And there is nudity in it. And I will say the artist did know how to draw naked bodies. Episode 3 for anybody who wishes to watch.
Suddenly thousands of teenage boys are looking up episode 3.
The bathhouse scene with the actual physically covering her V with the hands sort of thing. Well, so that's episode 3 if you want to judge for yourself. Continuity was a problem throughout as well. The random weapon appearances. Where, like I say, she has this like 6-foot sword and you'd expect her to be carrying it everywhere. No, it's just the skimpy bikini armor. And then out of nowhere, stuff kicks off and all of a sudden the sword appears out of thin air. And it's the same with every other character. Every weapon they have, it just appears out of thin air, and it's like, why were they carrying it? I mean, they're on a quest to find this armor. Where were they carrying that?
Do they not have a cool animation for it? Just like, ting.
No.
Do they not have like a baggage train or a carriage or something like that?
They did carry it, but like I say, this sword's like 6 foot. You can't hide it.
You keep it in the wagon.
Unless she's hiding it in that extraordinarily large cleavage of hers, I can't see any other way of it. But it's a gigantic 6-foot sword. At least draw it on her back or something, carrying it.
Yeah,
the logistics of a driver's insane.
At least in Berserk, Guts carried his sword on his back.
Yeah, I mean, she's just carrying it. It's just like, oh, I'm carefree. Like, you know, bikini armor, which weighs about 2 pounds in itself. Maybe she wanted to get super thin and tomboyish.
But all I know is that bikini armor doesn't really offer that much protection.
It offers very high magic protection, though.
But this is a world full of women, so they will respect the bodies of their opponents.
Really? Have you ever seen women fight? Is it UFC or MMA that Ronda Rousey's in? I watched her punch another woman unconscious and then conscious.
What, really?
Yeah, she had her on the ground in a headlock, repeatedly punching her. And you could see the woman go unconscious because her hands went limp. And then next hit, she's woken up again.
That cannot be a pleasant experience. Just like everything goes white and then you wake up.
Yeah. I have seen women fight. They don't fight. They don't respect each other.
Well, no, this is a world full of, what if a world was full of women?
That would be worse. You know, this whole idea that, you know, women should be in charge and stuff like that. I'm all for equality. But if you had a world where it was just women, they would be just as bad as the men.
If not worse.
If
well,
not worse.
People are kind of evil. So.
It's the age old thing. Hell hath no fury than a woman scorned. The female of the species is more deadly than the male. Women are far worse and far more vindictive than men. Men are just stupid muscle heads, right?
I think it's less that women are like more evil. They're probably just they're just better at being evil when they want to be.
Yeah.
So she's hiding the sword in her boobs. But the voice acting selection for the dub was okay cast. Brittany Karabowski was great as Hideyoshi. I also have a soft spot for Tiffany Grant, but that's mostly for Infinite Stratos, where she's an eye patch wearing German. But she also voiced a few characters in this. And
was that her in Infinite Stratos?
Yes.
Oh, God.
I got to meet her at, I think it was Digicon last year, and she did a panel and nobody would dare go up and ask her a question. So she just treated us to this whole, like, boring story about a cat until somebody got so bored they had to get up and ask a question.
I would have just been asking a question straight off.
Oh, I did. I was the first one to approach the mic. But it's like that, everyone's getting awkward, like, I don't know what to do.
Don't know how I feel about this. I can't look you in the eye because of all the,
Well, mine was the whole, what was my question? Oh, yeah, what's the weirdest thing that's happened to you at a convention? And she went on to tell us the story about a guy who sat next to her at one of these convention breakfasts, just sat next to her, like, I want to bake you a cake. And then I think he asked something inappropriate, like, would you sit on the cake if I baked you one? and then the whole table, like, heard this and, like, stops and, like, looks at this guy. But that's off on the tangent. the one like negative I would have with the whole voicing of it was the laughs, and I you know how in One Piece everybody has their own laugh, their own individual laugh, like, ha 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 ha, and ha ha ha. Well, this was like a whole soundtrack of Tidus laughs.
Seriously,
ha 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 ha.
Yeah.
Oh God.
The best Tidus laugh I've seen in anime was from The Jungle Was Always Peaceful, then along came Goo. And Goo, they're trying to teach Goo how to laugh. And when she starts laughing, it's basically robotic jaw, you know, square mouth, robotic jaw. And it's just, that's her laugh.
So whoever was the voice director there, they really needed to get better laughs. Because it was painful. After like episode 4, it was just painful to hear Nobunaga's laugh over and over and over
again.
Anime's
like known for its fantastic laughs. It's, yeah.
Well, this fell well short of that kind of standard.
What was the Japanese dub like?
I didn't watch the Japanese dub. I only watched the English one.
Interesting.
But development over the whole series were like of characters and plot was slow.
Is there any
slow to non-existent?
There's loads of plot, at least surely.
No.
Plot jingling all over the place.
Collect the armor. Bad guy gets the armor. Defeat it. Bad guy becomes friend. The end. And
GG.
I mean, all the characters were 2D and predictable the whole way through. I feel there could be, like I say, there could have been a lot done. The whole history behind Oda Nobunaga, like I say, it's referenced a lot in other animes and other walks of Japanese like lore. And they could have done a lot more with it and added some actual physical growth, especially to like Hideyoshi, because she's like a girl out of her time, but she stays the same the whole way through. She doesn't learn anything new. Yeah. I mean, the fact that they actually had a train to see what powers and what like skills she had, she never used her like kung fat skills once in the whole thing. She never got into a battle. She always got like kidnapped, and it was up to like Oda or the general.
So she's olive oil.
Yeah. So save me olive. And it felt like, it felt about as exciting as watching a kid collect his Panini stickers to complete an album. I will put it on par with that. It's same characters, same skills. There's no development at all the way through, and it was the variety was lacking greatly. Another criticism I have is the whole Yuri harem fan service I mean, I know I've touched on that. Yeah. It was way over the top, with too much button boob focus. I sound really. I'm saying this, but there was way too much of it. I mean, if you the one thing that encapsulates it is the whole of episode 7, where it's like the midway point of the whole series, and for some reason there's a cultural festival going on, and rather. No.
PTSD flashbacks.
and rather than focus on like something actual cultural, they end up doing a play, air quotes, a play that was based on one of the characters' Yuri fan fictions.
Oh,
where
nice.
Everybody like dogpiles onto Nobunaga, and she's just like, "You're a good girl. You're a good girl too." And then all the rest of them are like, "Oh, well, we good girls too. Dogpile." And so yeah, it's just. A big woman pile, and the dog tries to get in on it, but gets deflected by butt bounce.
I'm sorry, but yeah,
it's not. See, I'm not a huge fan of smut, but it's detrimental to the story when over like three quarters of it's like trying to play to what's in my pants rather than what's in my head.
Is it even funny when it like happens? Like
no, it's not. I mean. If they were going to go the full way, they could have put more nudity in, which they didn't.
Mm.
But it's just the whole implied, like, oh.
So it didn't have the courage of its convictions.
No,
then.
It didn't. It was weak sauce all over that. But the actual Blu-ray menu of it was good, basic menu, not much of the extras. I can't imagine what extras you could stick onto that, honestly. I can't imagine anybody will go back and like, you know what, we're going to add some director's commentary onto that, because nobody will be proud to put the name to it. I mean, I wouldn't. The only extras you get was adverts. And like I say, the best part of the adverts was the Rosario Vampire trailer, which was fan service. it was just unashamed. It's like, yes. So all in all, no, it's not the worst series that I've seen, but by far not the best. It's got absolutely no educational or gripping storyline, just usual cookie-cutter fan service. It just fills a gap.
Fan service everywhere.
And yeah. The lack of storyline and development of any of the characters, along with a predictable villain, and spoiler alert, it's the psycho with the pink hair. The subpar ending that led to a disappointing finale. If you've got too much time to fritter away your life and you're partial to brief animated nudity and lots of sephiric Yuri all up in your face, then this is for you. But it's not rewatchable material, and just trying to remember that not all anime is historically memorable or anything like that. It can't be mainstream meme bait, but sometimes you just need a 13-episode fan service series where the plot line is as skimpy as the outfits. And I'd give this series a tucky rating of 2 stars. And that's going to become a thing now. Be prepared for tucky ratings.
So you can build your deep plots, your shining examples of what anime could be. Yes. But in the end, fan service will prevail.
Do you know
when
that
happens?
Do you know the best thing about tucky ratings?
Disappointed.
We're not actually going to tell them what the maximum rating is.
The 9,000-star rating gets it.
Just like, you know, it could have been a 5 out of 100.
It was frustrating to watch the whole thing because I knew I could have been doing something better with my time. So the listeners,
that's the worst feeling.
Yeah, that's the worst type of show to watch.
Listeners better be grateful that I'm taking the hit.
That you took the bullet for the...
I mean, there'll be the one there saying, "Ooh, brief partial nudity, get in, lots of fury, yes."
But surely, if they manage to watch this, they probably got the internet.
Yeah, it's not bad. I mean, MVM Entertainment did a great Blu-ray like with it, and I suggest.
Was it Blu-ray or DVD?
It was Blu-ray.
Ah,
well, cool. It worked on my PS4, so I'm assuming. Right.
Yeah, but DVDs work on your PS4, don't they?
No.
Do they not?
No. I tried it before and I complained, and somebody went, "Oh, well, my vinyl record doesn't work on my PS4 either." It's like, "Ah, you smart ass." But it's like I say, if you've got the time to fritter away, if you're just going towards a slow grave, then, you know, watch it.
Worse.
Visual euthanasia.
Do you know the sad part? I mean, Nobunaga's a character that appears all over media in Japan. But what I'd really love to see, because there was a news story that came out, I think it was last week, that the original creators of Onimusha haven't written off making a new game in the franchise. And I thought it would be amazing if somebody basically took Onimusha 1, 2, and 3, well, let's leave 4 to one side,
Let's never speak of it.
Yeah, but Onimusha 1, 2, and 3. And basically did like a series, an anime series for each one in the run-up to the new game. And that would be massive. It would have a massive promotional effect for the new game. Word would get out. And it's Onimusha, right? Onimusha is probably the best kind of horror version of Nobunaga you're going to find.
Definitely worth it if they would actually put the money behind it and
if they get Takeshi Kaneshiro to voice Samanosuke again, if they got him to voice Samanosuke, all of the fans are going to be going nuts. They'll go really, really nuts over it. They've got Jean Reno to do his French turn in Onimusha 3, which I'm sure somebody could talk him into that.
He's got a big power by now. He'll need the money for something. He'll have a hobby that he can't fund. Normally, no. Seems like that kind of person.
All these rich actors.
I collect belly button fluff from exotic places.
What, you or him?
No, it's not a confession. I was going to look in the attic and find jars of belly button fluff.
I was going to say, from exotic from like places.
Skegness and Western Superman.
I've got them in jars with location and slight hue.
Oh, right, okay. We are at the end of the show. Both those anime are available from MVM, aren't they?
Yes, MVM, mine is.
Yeah, I think RAMO is from MVM as well. I like the fact that MVM keeps bringing out all the stuff that the other companies just don't tend to look at, because there's been some absolute gems that they've brought out.
Absolute trash as well, but...
Yeah, but, you know...
The thing is, it gives you variety. You can't have all good.
Yeah, the fact that they're actually pushing themselves to bring these things out. You know, it gives people the option. It gives them a lot more options than they used to have.
Mm. I think variety is the spice of life, and where would we be if it was just all mainstream?
Exactly. Yeah. And on that note, we are at the end of the show. If you want to get in touch with us, you can do so on studio@thegeekshow.co.uk. You can find our website at thegeekshow.co.uk. And if you enjoyed this show or any of the other shows on our podcast network, then you can consider making a donation using the PayPal button on the right-hand side. Or if you want something for your money, then buy one of our lovely pieces of merchandise, because we are a volunteer organization. The Geek Show is a volunteer organization, so we do need all the support we can get. All of our shows are available on Mixcloud, iTunes, YouTube, and various other places. So, yeah, you'll find us everywhere.
We're here.
Just
we're
not on TV.
We're under your bed.
Yes. We're not on TV in any way, shape, or form. So, right. I have been Rob.
I've been Lewis.
And I have been Tucky.
We'll see you all next week. Take care, have fun, and...
I don't have one today. I'm too sad.
Aww.
There's no way that the final battle of Ruby could be this depressing.
Depression sign out.